Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering Division III sports through interviews with those involved in Division III. Man, oh man, do we have a great episode coming for the listeners, Ruta.
Yeah, it's definitely a good one, KJ. Joe, man, he's a really good guy, really good basketball player, too. He played, you know, D3 basketball at Augsburg, which is a school in Minnesota. And he just finished up his career at Colorado State, which is in a high major conference. So, like I said, really good guy. Gives a lot of good, info and just little pieces about his life that I think can help a lot of people. You know what I'm saying? Just the advice he gave was just really good. It was a good interview.
Yeah. Like you said, really good guy. And what I like most about Joe is, he talked about, I'm not going to spoil too much, but even when he started to get a little bit of fame, it was just nice knowing that, if you're a genuine person, then, you can have that impact on people. So I feel like that's really touching because people try to get to fame through a bunch of various reasons, like doing crazy stuff, trying to go viral, but just being yourself, it pays off. But Joe Palmer played at Augsburg, a school in Minnesota, Division III, averaged 21 points in his junior year, was only second team All-American, tested the waters, believed in himself, and ended up at one of the best conferences in the Mountain West playing at Colorado State. So he has a ton of insight regarding that jump from D3 to D1 and how to change your role kind of, but still be such an impactful player. Like from the minute he got to Colorado State, he had an impact on that team.
Yeah, for real. And one thing I'm noticing too, when we talk to all these players that, transfer from Division III to Division I, a constant thing I'm hearing is they just want to bet on themselves. They just want to see how far they could take basketball. They want to, keep challenging themselves. And that's why they're the best players, you know what I mean? Because they're challenging themselves to go farther and to be better. And that's dope to see at the end of the day.
Yeah. One good point that I love that you brought up is that someone mentioned a Division III coach said he can start seeing Division III schools being a feeder school to Division I. So Division I's are just taking Division III kids and putting them in their program. And I feel like this is very interesting because we just talked to Alex Sobel, and he was the player of the year, ended up at Sacred Heart. And Joe Palmer wasn't the player of the year. He was second team All-American, and he ended up at a team that made it past the round of 64 in the March Madness. So everything is just situational. Joe, like he said, he did his homework picking his school, and it ended up paying off. So I respect that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, D3 to D1, that's dope for the game, just to see the game grow and see players keep shining at the next level. That's cool. But also another thing, too, is these D3 coaches, when they're going out and recruiting, they see the talent in these players. You know what I'm saying? They're developing them. They're coaching them. They're getting them in the gym. They're teaching them what, they know about the game. And then they're moving on to the next level. You know what I'm saying? So in a sense, some of these D3 coaches are doing their homework a little bit more, or paying attention a little bit more, looking at that bright spot that they might not see, that the Division I coaches might not see. So, that's a dope thing, too. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing for D3 to go to D1, feeder schools, whatever it may be, I don't know. We can't answer that. But we do know, like I said, it's good for growing the game. And that's what we want.
Yeah. That's a great, great insight that you just gave. And also, shout out to all Division III coaches because they're putting in the same amount of hours as these Division I coaches. They're not getting the recognition. They're not getting the same salaries. But like you said, they're still doing the dirty work and getting these players a spotlight to what, Joe can move from Augsburg to Colorado State and be a household name now because he was able to make that jump.
Yeah.
But we get into a lot of conversation with Joe, a ton of great conversation regarding Division III to Division I, the Mountain West. You know, it was very controversial that they had six teams in the Division I tournament, and people believe Big East got slighted, but Joe gave some good insight on why the Mountain West was not as popular as some of the Big East teams. And then, you know, we talk about Headband Joe, why he's so popular. And I don't know, it's just fun to hear about, you know, a genuine person that was able to make a name for himself and now is going to be able to make a living for himself through this basketball game.
Not for real. It's just the biggest thing that's, you know, that's cool about this podcast is like we're able to like connect with different people and like just have different conversations. You know what I mean? And like Joe's a good dude and like he's going to go far just based on who he is. Like he was talking about, I asked him, you know, what separated you from other Division III athletes? Like what like, and he didn't even give us like a basketball reason. He didn't give us like, I put in the most work. He was like, oh, just the connections I made. You know what I mean? And like that's I thought that was such an interesting answer by him. You know what I mean? Just to say that, like, yeah, some D3 guys, like, they're not connected. They don't try to connect with other people. They don't try to, like, bring their team together for workouts, whatever it may be. Like, I thought that was cool that he said that. He's going to go far.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you guys for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button. If you're watching on Apple Podcasts.
Definitely subscribe.
Yeah, subscribe to the pod. And if you're watching on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, make sure you're hitting the follow button. We really appreciate it. But let's get into the conversation with Joe. All right, we're here with Joe. How you feeling today, bro?
Feeling good. Excited to be on here.
Yes, sir. It's going to be a good episode. I'm excited for this one right here, KJ.
Yes, sir. Me too. So March Madness just ended yesterday when we're recording. Did you watch March Madness after you guys were eliminated, or what's that like?
Yeah, so I definitely, right after we lost, when we lost to Texas, I couldn't watch the rest of the round of 64 games. It just made me sick to my stomach. I mean, because it was honestly like up to like I started watching around the Elite Eight. Again, and I was just kind of like, man, like we could still be playing right now. And like, I know, and like, I'm sure, you know, like everyone else in the nation probably felt that, but like, it just made me sick to my stomach. And then around the Elite Eight, I started watching and stuff like that. It was cool. But yeah, man. So it was crazy game last night too. UConn and Purdue. UConn is, looks too good, man.
They're loaded, bro.
High level team right there, bro.
Yeah. Tristan Newton was nuts. So
yeah, was there a team in the Elite Eight that you was following, or you were just watching all of them and, you know, dissecting them?
I was watching all of them, but I think like everyone else, NC State, I was cheering for them the whole time. I love like DJ Burns, DJ Horn, was it Middlebrook number 34? The big white dudes. I thought Ben Middlebrook, I think it was.
Yeah,
but what's it? I like how he played. And then obviously, DJ Burns, man, he was so fun to watch. Like, his touch and just, like, passing was unreal.
Quickly, before we move on, just a little D3 history for you. Their NC State's coach, he was a D3 player, so he's got a lot of D3 connections.
I did not know that. That's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy how, when you think about it, how like, kind of, like, locked in places D3 dudes are. Like, you don't really know it, so. That's why good you guys do stuff like this, man. Kind of get the word out there.
Word. We appreciate that, bro, for real.
Yeah.
You know, you committed to Augsburg, but you were a true sport athlete in high school. You played basketball, football, and baseball. You were all area for baseball, all area for football two times, and all area player of the year for basketball. So what was that like being a high school true sport athlete and also being dominant in those sports?
It was fun, man. I missed playing all those sports and stuff like that. And I think that helped me just to be like more like well-rounded in sports. I love basketball. That's always been like the sport I've loved the most my whole life. I grew up watching my older brothers play. They played Division III college basketball. So I was like, I knew all along I wanted to play college basketball, but I really just kept playing football and baseball because I was pretty good at it. And kind of like my parents just wanted me to keep playing. They wanted me to be a three-sport athlete. They didn't really want me to like focus in on just basketball and like get burnt out, I guess. But I loved it, man. I wouldn't change what my experience was in my upbringing. And it ended up working out, you know, in the long run, but I miss it.
Yeah.
What position were you in baseball and football?
I played so my junior year football, I played running back. Senior year switched over to quarterback. So we kind of ran more like read options stuff. And then baseball, I pitched and played outfield.
Tough.
This might be an ignorant question, but are you a big Vikings fan?
Huge, yeah, man. It's a lot of suffering, but I love the Vikings. I love all Minnesota sports teams. So Timberwolves, Twins, Vikings, everyone. So
respect.
Talking a little bit more about Minnesota. Minnesota actually has a really underrated basketball scene out there, like Jalen Suggs, Chet Holmgren. I know Tyus Jones is from there. So just talk about what it was like competing in the Minnesota area.
Man, it really started blowing up. I mean, like Tyus Jones was like one of like the first like guys who really put us on the map, I feel like. And then obviously Trey Jones. But then, man, in my conference, we had Booth Gotch, who went and played at Utah and Minnesota. Matthew Hurt played at Duke, and he was ACC Player of the Year. And we had this, like, a bunch of other, like, low-major D1 guys and stuff like that. But then, like, up in, like, the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, like, you have all those guys, like, Jalen, Chet, Kendall Brown, Gary Trent Jr. The list goes on and on. And I'm just glad that, like, Minnesota basketball scene has been getting a lot more respect because we're known as like a hockey state. Obviously, it's the state of hockey. But I mean, there's been so many guys to come out of here and play, like, not just at the Division I level, but now in the NBA. I mean, Chet Holmgren might win Rookie of the Year this year. So
it's my boy.
Minnesota product. Yes.
So talking a little bit more about like the Minnesota basketball scene, you know, you played high school in Minnesota. So, you know, what was the recruitment process like for you just playing in a competitive, you know, state like Minnesota?
Yeah. So it was, for me, it wasn't great because the school I was at wasn't near Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. So it was like an hour south. So it wasn't that great for me personally. And I think it hurt me a little bit playing baseball and football and not like playing AU in the fall, AU in the spring, AU in the summer, like all the time, you know what I'm saying? So that's really what hurt me, I think, looking back on it now. But just like playing the competition, like it set me up so well for going into, you know, I obviously went Division III to start, set me up like way ahead of other guys, I feel like, going into my situation just because of the competition level I played at in high school and like going against D1, D2 guys, JUCO guys, NAIA guys, just like constantly every game really helped me in the long run.
When you were competing against those type of guys, did you think like in high school I can play at the Division I level, or did you think like Division III was the level you were supposed to be at?
I think in the moment, you know, when you're younger like that, you obviously think like, man, I'm good enough to go D1, I'm good enough to do this, I'm good enough to be the NBA, you know, it's kind of like that youngness in you, you know what I'm saying? But looking back on it now, I think D3 was like the level it was meant to be at. I did get some D2 offers and whatnot. I didn't really like them. But I'd be lying to you if I said when I was in high school, I obviously wanted to play D1. I thought I could have played D1. Looking back at me now, I don't think I could have. I don't think I would have been ready. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I think I developed a lot more in my first couple years at Augsburg, which really helped me propel into that Division I level.
Yeah. Let's get into some Augsburg talk. You know, your freshman year, you averaged 9 points and 4 rebounds. Not the best stats, but that's still good stats for a freshman. But skipping towards your junior year, you start averaging close to 21 points and 9 rebounds. So talk about what that jump of production was and what you were kind of working on throughout the off seasons to get to that point.
Yeah, so my freshman year, I played with – the reason why I went to Augsburg, I played with Booker Copeland, who was the 2019 – he was the Division III Player of the Year. So he was National Player of the Year. And so, like, I kind of saw him, and I wanted to be what he was a little bit. So I saw that and I was like, all right, I can go there. I can learn from him. I can practice against him every day. And I want to like beat him. So that was a selling point for me to Augsburg. And so I did that. And then I knew I would kind of have to take a back seat a little bit to him. I mean, he's coming off as a junior national player of the year. Like, he's going to be getting shots up. You know what I'm saying? So that first year was just a big time learning year and just like learning as much as I could from Booker, who's now a pro in Germany. He's been over there for like 3 years and he's killing it. But then obviously sophomore year, COVID, we played like 6 or 7 games. And then junior year, yeah. I worked with my assistant coach a lot, who wasn't my assistant coach at the time, Harry Sony. And man, he was just honest with me. And like, I appreciated that so much. And he said, like, listen, like, you can basically like, yeah, like be this guy and not work on your game very much. And like, yeah, you might score 15, 18 points a game, but like, you could be better than that. I was like, okay, I really bought into that, what he was telling me. So I started working on my handle a lot, working on like consistently shooting, consistently knocking down shots, and just like how to like, just like, I don't know, just like play better. Like just play within the offense, play within like a flow and play within like a structure. And he really like opened my eyes to like the game of basketball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Everyone kind of has their own off-season workouts. Were you more of like I'm just going to train, or were you playing 5-on-5? What kind of was your mindset with that?
Yeah. So I just did like individual workout stuff. And then I played a lot of ones, cause I feel like one, like 3 dribble ones, 5 dribble ones, whatever you got to do. I feel like that really like can like, you know, when you're on an island or something like that, like offensively and defensively can really help you. Cause I mean, man, you can do all the train stuff in the world, like, and whatnot, but like nothing's going to compare to like real live action stuff. That's, I feel like, where like the difference is made. So that helped me a little playing ones.
You talked about working with your assistant coach, and you know, one thing that I'm just wondering about, you know, in your 3-year career at Augsburg, what was something that you did or a trait of yours that you think separated yourself from other Division III athletes?
Man, I'm a big relationship guy. So I'm constantly like reaching out to guys, talking, getting guys in the gym, you know, because you guys know how it is at D3. A lot of guys, it's like you're not required to get individual workouts in the summertime, in the springtime, in the fall, whatnot. It, you know, there's like a guy on the team who kind of like correlates all that. And I was that guy who would get guys in the gym, get guys in the weight room, doing whatever. I think that's really like separated me was just the schmoozing and like talking and like making sure that guys are like invested into like what we were doing, because I really cared about it and I wanted to win. And so, you know, you can't do anything by yourself, especially in basketball. You need like everyone with you. So I think like that relationship piece with those guys, who I still am like best friend to this day, I think that's what carried us a long way.
You know, after a successful junior year, you averaged 21 points a game. What went into the decision to transfer D1? Like, where were you like, I want to find a new situation? Like, what made you think that?
Man, so at first I was just kind of thinking about it. It was like our playoff game, and I had some people, like random people from like the other team, like they're like parents or whatever, fans, whoever it was, and they were just like, hey, we heard you're transferring D1. Is that true? And I just kind of was like looking at them like, what? Like, I haven't heard anything. Like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. And at that point, the Division I season wasn't even near over yet. Mm. And then, so I was just like, that kind of like planted that seed in my head a little bit. Was it when like people started talking to me about it? So I kind of like started thinking about it in my head, talked to a lot of people that I knew who were at the Division I level or at the Division II level, and just kind of like, yeah, like, be honest with me, like, what would it look like for me if I was to like decide to like leave? Mm-hmm. And I had like a lot of good people in my corner. And then at first I decided, all right, I'm going to stay for one more year and then finish out my 4-year career at Augsburg and then grad transfer. And I thought that's what I was going to do. And then something just wasn't feeling right in me. And I was just like, ah, oh, man, I don't think it's the right decision. I think I got to do it, because I think 2 years at Division I level will benefit me in the long run, rather than just one. So I decided, I'm going to put my name in the portal. And this family out in Fort Collins, Colorado, where Colorado State is, they knew me very well, and they knew the coaches here very well. So they just kind of like hooked us up, and it worked out. So
that's tough.
So what was the transfer portal? What was the transfer portal like though? Like, you were still all American after that year. And like I said, you averaged 21. So were you getting interest from other schools, or is just like that Colorado State connection was there?
The Colorado State connection was there. And when I heard that the coaches were really interested in me, I was kind of like, all right, like CSU, that's it for me. Like I'll go there for sure. And then I had some other schools, some other Division I schools, like in the Summit League and stuff like that, who hit me up. But I just knew that, like, I wanted to bet on myself and try and play at the highest level that was there. At Colorado State's obviously in the Mountain West Conference. And, I mean, shoot, we're not technically a Power 5, but this year we had six teams in the tournament. So that's more than a lot of other Power 5 schools. So I just knew that I wanted to try and play at the highest level I could.
Yeah. I want to talk more about the Mountain West, but first I want to hear – what was kind of your teammates and coaching staff telling you when you entered the portal? Like, were they trying to convince you, or were they saying, like, go be the best Joe?
No, they did not want me to leave at all. They, my coaches at Augsburg, they're great people. And I wish them obviously nothing but the best. And my little brother was also on my team at Augsburg. So they were like, man, like, you got to stay, like, you got all this. We're going to be next year. We're going to win a MIAC championship. And they were just trying to convince me to stay. And that's what made it so hard, man, because I love those people, and they did so much for me and like helping me get to where I was at that time. But I just felt like in order for me to grow, I needed to like take the next step. You know, so I think CSU was taking that next step.
Yeah. One thing I will say about like talking to different athletes at the D3, D2, D1 level, there's not really the type of connection that you see at the D3 level. Like, you know, you build those bonds with your teammates, and I don't know why, but it's just it's a different sense of feeling. The teammates you have and the coaching staff, the supporters around the school, it's hard to describe, but you know what I'm saying.
Dude, I know exactly what you mean. My two best friends still to this day are my freshman year roommates who we play basketball. And that was like one of the hardest parts, bro. I was telling them like, hey, like, I'm not coming back. And like, they supported me, and they're like, you have to, they're kind of the ones saying to me like all the time, like, man, you have to do this. Like, you got such good offers. You have to do it. I don't want to leave y'all, man. Like, cause you, like you said, man, that bond is unbreakable.
Yeah. So transitioning back to Colorado State, you committed to a team that was coming off a 25-6 record. They had a great year. They're playing in a great conference in the Mountain West where they were 14-4. They made the March Madness tournament. So obviously you're playing with some dudes. They're a great team. What were you kind of thinking at Colorado State, committing to Colorado State? And what did you kind of have to work on to get on the court in your first year?
Yeah, so that's a great point. I remember watching them in the March Madness tournament that year playing against Michigan, and kind of like thinking like, man, like, they hit me, like, they're talking to me, like, that's kind of crazy, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's weird. But and I just kind of like, I watched a lot of film. I went on Synergy just trying to see, like, because that's such an important part in the transfer portal, like seeing where you can fit in and like where you can be in the system, you know what I'm saying? So I knew that David Roddy was obviously going to go to the NBA draft, and a couple of other guys who were transferring or leaving. So I knew that they could use shooting and they could use an energy guy. So I was just like, in that first year, the thing that they were most concerned about with me was defense, which, you know, at that level, it's completely, completely different. You know, you got to lock in defensively. So that first year, man, it was just the speed of the game and how much like bigger, stronger, faster everyone was. And then just being able to like guard on an island, like one-on-one, like, all right, like, I have to keep this guy in front of me. I can't let him just like blow by me, you know? So that was the biggest adjustment, and that was their biggest concern. And so I worked on it relentlessly, man. Like, I worked on in individual workouts, I was working on like defense, not like shooting or nothing, like defense. So
that's crazy. Talking more about like the transition, one thing I noticed watching your film at both levels, it looks like your game kind of transitioned from, you know, you were dunking on people and one of the better players on the court every time you stepped on. And then at the D1 level, you're known as more like a gritty shooter. So do you think that your off season kind of changed, like when you're at the D3 level, knowing what to focus on, and then at the D1 level?
Yeah, that was the hardest adjustment, man. It was just like trying to literally shed every bit of like pride, I guess, maybe, or just like, cause like I, my whole life, I was like the guy, you know what I mean? I was like the guy that was like scoring 20, getting 10 rebounds, playing 35, 36, 37 minutes. And like, I knew that I wasn't going to be getting that Colorado State. Like I wasn't like going to go in there and be like, oh, I'm still going to like be the guy and score 20. So I knew like, and the coach is talking to me about it. You're going to have to like carve out a role for yourself, and you have to like know what your role is, be what your role is, and love what your role is. So that first year, man, it was really tough because I was like, man, I don't know really like what my role is. I don't know how I can like thrive. And then towards the end of the first year, I kind of like started to get that, all right, gritty guy, getting on the floor, playing really good defense, guarding one of the other team's better offensive players, getting a lot of just offensive rebounds and whatnot, extra possessions, and banging open shots. And then that second, then that's what kind of propelled me and helped me be in a better spot, was just kind of knowing what my role was.
Before I ask this next question, I just want to say it's kind of interesting how you were saying that, like, it wouldn't have been the same if you had just stayed 1 year at Colorado State. Like, you think, like, so in the long run, it looks like it helped yourself out by just going there for 2 years, like your first year, kind of learning what it's like to play at that level, and then transitioning to like really getting a big role for yourself on the team.
Yeah, for sure. And I knew like I wanted to play professionally. So I think like just like experiencing what it's like to like, because some guys go through their whole basketball career having the ball in their whole hand, in their hands the entire time, and they don't know how to play off the ball. They don't know how to like fill another role on a team. They don't know how to like help a team win when they don't have the ball in their hand. You know what I'm saying? And on every team, wherever you're going to be, like, only one guy has the ball in his hands for a majority of the shot clock. So the odds aren't good that it's going to be you every time. So you got to adjust and learn, like, how can I affect the game and how can I impact winning without the ball in my hands? How can I be a better screener, better cutter, better passer, better rebounder, better shooter? So that's just like what I had to learn. I think it helped me. Like my stats sometimes don't show that, but I know personally, and like my coaches and a lot of like overseas coaches and agents, that's what they kind of like are selling and like about me. So
just to rewind a little bit, I want to hear just about your first summer at Colorado State. You know, at Division III, we're not allowed to, you know, group up in the summers and work out. Obviously, you know, teammates can kind of coordinate things over the summer and whatnot, but it's not like, you know, you go into the school and you work out there for a set number of weeks, you lift, practice. So if you can, just shed a little light on what those summer workouts were like, and if you have any stories from the, you know, those first couple workouts.
Man, I was in Colorado, my first summer workout. The elevation is no joke, first and foremost. So I got full body cramps my first workout, and like I couldn't move my quads, couldn't move my shoulders, like my neck, like literally everything. Just cramping up. So that was humbling. My first ever one. And everyone's kind of like, oh man, like who is this guy? And then I got here in the summer late. So I got four practices under my belt before we flew, or workouts before we flew to Costa Rica and played two games down there. So that was a crazy experience in itself. But those first four, I just remember I was so overwhelmed. Like, I was like, man, these guys are like unreal. And like, I was just kind of like thinking like, I still had a lot of confidence in myself, but I was just kind of thinking like, man, like, what did I get myself into? You know what I mean? Like, these guys are like unreal. And I don't like, you know, I had a little bit of like imposter syndrome, like kind of like, man, what am I doing here? I shouldn't have left. I had a good situation. But then after like that first day, I was kind of like, no, I can't be thinking like that. I can't be thinking like that. I got to go at these guys. So I started to do that. But my first story I had was that first practice or workout. We ended up playing 5-on-5 at the end. And John Tanjay, who's one of my good buddies, he's at Missouri now. I crossed him over and he fell and I hit a 3 and I was kind of like, okay, like, yeah, I can do this. And then literally next possession down, he calls basically for an ISO. And me and him are guarding each other because we were playing the same position. And he just backs me down, Barkley's me, palms it with his left, and I'm just under the basket, and he just punches it right on me. And I was kind of like, all right, welcome to D1. It was my welcome to D1 moment. So I was like,
that's kind of crazy, though. Like, you dropped him, though, so you guys are basically even at that point. But I'm curious, you know, you were unsettled. You thought, like, man, should I have left? Was there anyone or any specific moment where you were like, I have a mentor, they're setting me down, this player who's an upperclassman is showing me the ropes? I want to hear about that.
Yeah. So I had a coach, Aaron Katsuma, and who's now at New Mexico. He was our coach at CU at that time. But he was just kind of like the one that was like, hey man, like, listen, like, this is gonna be hard, but you gotta like believe in yourself and know that you belong here. And then Coach Medved, my head coach, he kind of said the same thing to me. I remember during a game, he was just like, it was a heated moment. I was in the game. I was kind of like getting out of character. And he just starts like tapping me, yelling me like, you belong here. Like, you belong here. So it's stuff like that, man, that goes a long way. Just knowing that, like, man, if like your coaches believe in you, it's a different type of confidence that kind of gets instilled in you. So I definitely say that Aaron Katsuma and Coach Jones was another one. These those two coaches that were just like constantly every day, hey Palmer, let's get some shots up. Hey, let's get a lift in. Hey, let's just get lunch together. Let's get breakfast. Let's talk. Stuff like that, man. That goes a long way. So that's what helped me a lot.
Word. I'm kind of skipping ahead here, KJ, but what was something that like you wish you knew before you even started at Colorado State? Like, obviously, yeah, like you've been there for 2 years, you don't regret anything, but you know, obviously there's something that you might think like, damn, I wish I knew that coming in. Like, what did you have a moment like that or no?
I wish I knew how much more like theatrics went into it. Like, if that makes sense, like the non-basketball stuff, like I thought that like, oh man, we're going to go there. And like, it's just basketball all day, every day, which I wanted. And that's what like I thought. And it was, don't get me wrong, but it was like, so much more outside of that, being at like a higher level of Division One, it was like, you know, like people in the community or boosters and whatnot, just kind of like trying to like get your time, you know what I mean? And so I had to learn that, how to like protect my time, because like, you know, man, I had to like rest, I had to recover, I had to be, you know, get everything I had in like that 2-3 hour practice that we had or that game that we had. So just kind of like getting pulled in different directions from like people in the community and stuff, that kind of got tough.
Yeah. Well, you spent a lot of good words to us right now, but we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back, talk about some March Madness and the rest of your career at Colorado State. All right, we're back. Doing research on you, Ruta and I like came across that in every game you're wearing a headband. And we saw that your nickname is actually Headband Joe. So I'm kind of curious where that nickname, how that came about, and like why you continue to wear a headband throughout these years.
Yeah. So I go back. So at Augsburg, I kind of wore a headband a few games, just kind of like experimented with it. And then I get to Colorado State and I didn't wear it. And I didn't want to like, I don't know. I just didn't want to be too flashy when I first got there. And then my grandma couldn't see me on the TV, so I tried wearing yellow shoes. And then she still couldn't see me on the TV. She couldn't find which one I was. So I started wearing a headband again. And she's like, now I can see you because you're the only one wearing a headband. So I was like, all right, I'll keep wearing the headband. And then from that moment on, I did like a little interview with people from CSU and then kind of told them that story. And then they just kind of like fell in love with that. And then from that moment on, I was like, oh, headband Joe, like, good dude. He cares about his grandma. Like, kind of like that stuff. So.
Shout out to grandma, though. Shout out to all the grandmas listening.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
But, you know, during that year, headband Joe kind of went viral, at least in Colorado State. But even like during the tournament and stuff, I was aware of it. The announcers talking about it.
He's a superhero now with the headband.
Against San Diego State on his birthday. Headband Joe had his own night.
So January 30th, it's your birthday. You guys are playing against a great team in San Diego State in the Mountain West. And there's 2,500 headbands handed out to students that are at the game. And in honor of Joe Palmer, or to kind of relate to Joe Palmer. So what was that crowd like for you? And talk a little about that game and how that feels, knowing that you had such an impact on Colorado State.
Yeah, man, that was, I mean, that's the stuff you'd like, I'll never forget, like that moment. Like, it was a lot of pressure for sure leading up to it. And obviously, you know, you want to do something crazy and like play really well. But I just remember too, just like seeing like a lot of like the kids and stuff like that after the game and whatnot. And just like them all wearing headbands or like trying to like their parents bought them headbands and stuff. So that was cool. And just like the impact that, like, I don't know, like if you're a genuine dude, you can kind of have. But that game was like, I never like asked for that stuff. You know what I mean? Like the theatrics of it and like the outside stuff, like the outside noise. And it just kind of like came along with it. Like, I just wanted to play. That's all I wanted to do. And then, so like when stuff like that happens, it just, when it's like happens naturally like that, like people just do stuff for you, it feels pretty good. So,
yeah. I noticed in one of the videos that the president of Colorado State actually was wearing a headband during that game. So that's obviously crazy. But do you have any other like crazy stories of like as a celebrity kind of?
My girlfriend got mad a few times because a lot of girls would stop me and want to take pictures. So she would get pretty mad at me. But yeah, then like when Amy Parsons, our the CSU president, she's awesome. But when she started wearing, she always sat courtside at her games. I look over, I see her wearing a headband. I'm like, man, what? Like, that's crazy. Like, she's wearing a headband. Like, that's when I kind of was like, all right, this is pretty real. So, but. Yeah. Yeah, man, that's probably like some of the funniest stuff I get.
That's tired.
So we talked a little bit about this off air, but you were kind of talking about how like a lot of your teams in the MIAC don't get at-large bids in the NCAA tournament, and now you competed in a conference in the Mountain West that, like you said, got 6 bids in the tournament this year.
Most in any conference.
Yeah, most in any conference. Yep. So that, you know, you could describe that as a high major conference. I wouldn't be mad at saying that. So you're now playing in a high major conference and competing every night. So I'm just wondering, what is that like for you just going into a game-to-game basis, like with that type of mindset?
Man, it's – every game means something, you know, and, like, especially in the Mountain West, like, you could – I think at one point we were in, like, second place and we lost one game and we dropped all the way down to 8th. Like, 1 through 8 – like everyone was like damn near the same record, you know what I'm saying? So it was like literally every single night, like wherever you were, like you knew you had to try and bring your best effort. And when on the road, man, almost in the Mountain West, like it was almost impossible, like trying to get a win on the road, like going into Utah State, going into Boise State,
yeah,
at San Diego State, like all of them had like 15,000 plus venues and they were all packed. So doing that was super hard. So you knew you had to win at home no matter what. Like, you had to take care of business at home. And then you just had to try and steal a couple when you're on the road. And we struggled to do that, but we did it enough in the Mountain West play. And what really carried us was our non-conference play, because, I mean, we beat Creighton by 20. We beat Boston College. We beat Washington. We lost a really close game to St. Mary's. We lost to them by 1. Who else? I mean, so yeah, our non-conference really carried us into the tournament.
Yeah, there was a ton of discourse throughout the year of, is the Mountain West, should they be categorized as like a Power Five conference or not? And going into the tournament, a lot of people were actually upset that the Mountain West put six teams into the tournament. Was that kind of talked about in the locker room, or did you guys just like not hear that in a type of way?
It was talked about, sure. Like, we were like, we would discuss it and just kind of be like, I think the reason why people didn't know about Mountain West basketball is because, like, I would be probably asleep by the time we were playing, you know, half the time, because our games would start at like 9:15. So that's like the game would end at one in the morning on the East Coast, you know. So a lot of like people on the East Coast didn't watch it, which is where the majority like basketball viewership is, I feel like. And so that's why I think it was like hard to like try and get like the Mountain West name out there, you know what I'm saying? And then I thought, man, we got everyone, like every Mountain West team kind of got hosed in like the seeding and stuff like that. Like Utah State got an 8, they won the conference. Yeah, and then like Boise State gets a play-in, and they finished third in the kind of like, yeah, it was so, I mean, what are you going to do though? Can't go back now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another question I'm kind of just thinking of on the fly. Obviously, you know, you respect your other coaches at Augsburg and you respect your coaches at Colorado State. But what were like some of the differences that you've seen in terms of maybe adjustments, play calling, leadership from the Division III to Division I level?
Yeah, at Division III, it was more very free flowing. It was like offensively, like we kind of had like our motion. And within that motion, you can kind of do like you have a lot of freedom to do whatever within that. And that play style is awesome, I think, and it's fun. And sometimes, though, it gets a little sporadic just because there's some bad shots taken, you know what I'm saying? And then at Division III, obviously, like, coaches can't be in contact with you at certain times. So that kind of was, like, always, like, a bummer, you know what I'm saying? Like, in, like, the summertime, the springtime, coaches really couldn't help you that much. And going to Division I, it was just, like, very, like, structured, like you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to be in this position, and you can take these shots, and like that's kind of it, you know what I'm saying? Like it was very like this is where the shot's going to come from, and that's what we're going to do, and that's how we're going to be successful. And everyone on our team bought into that, and that's why we had the success we had. But at times it would be like, dang bro, like I just want to go out there and like kind of like get like a bucket, you know what I'm saying? But you know, they'd have a play on the whiteboard. So that's what I noticed there. And then at Division I, like coaches are always like texting you saying, hey, like film, lift, workout, we're doing it all together, like, you know, like, and we're doing it together. And like, so that's kind of like the difference. It's just like the amount of time that coaches can kind of spend with you.
So circling back to you know, our original discussion, you talked about how it's tough to win on the road in the Mountain West. And it made me and KJ wonder, what was it like to go from less than 500 people in the crowd at Augsburg or any other Division III school usually, to then a packed stadium cheering for you, wearing headbands? But also, if you go on the road in the Mountain West, they're cheering against you. They're, you know, yelling stuff at you and all that. So what was that transition like for you?
Man, it was crazy. It's like, you know, you all like when you're in the driveway, you're shooting, you're always like dreaming, like hitting like a game winning shot, whatever, in front of like a sold out crowd. So and I'm not going to say like at Augsburg, there was some games where it was like, man, like there's a lot of people here. And like one of the games at Augsburg, it was the playoff game against McAllister. I run out and I think there was like 2,000 people there, or maybe just under 2,000. And they start all chanting F, like F Joe Palmer. That's like a Division III game. And I'm kind of like, oh my gosh. So I was just kind of smiling. I was laughing. I don't get angry very often. So I was just kind of smiling, like thought it was funny. And like, they're just all like, you know, a bunch of like college kids, Division College. They're just like, but yeah, so, but that did not prepare me for going into like San Diego State, Viejas Arena, where there's 20,000 people there. And like, it felt like they broke the sound barrier. You know what I'm saying? Saying like when they scored a bucket or did something, And then I think the craziest game fan-wise that I played in was my first year here when we played against CU. So at CSU, Colorado University rivalries, heated.
What and is that called again?
That's the Rocky Mountain Showdown.
Okay.
And so that game was the night that they introduced Deion Sanders as head coach. And it was the basketball game. So I remember it was like at like second half. I'm literally subbing at the game. I'm at the scores table. And then I see in the tunnel, no one else could see him yet, Deion Sanders, Shadur Sanders, and Shiloh walking in together. I'm like, oh man. And I swear to you, you could not hear, like you couldn't hear yourself think, like, it's how loud it got. And we That's got smacked wild. That game.
So yeah, nah, that's a crazy story. But were you kind of like starstruck when you saw those guys, or were you like, I gotta get some buckets now?
I wanted to get some buckets. It was cool. It was cool to see them, but it was like, all right, like I got back in.
Yeah.
Do something cool. Do something cool.
So let's talk about some March Madness. You know, you guys didn't win the Mountain West Conference Tournament, but you did well enough, like you said, non-conference and regular season play, that you guys got an at-large bid, which got you into March Madness. And you guys had to start with a first four game, still an elimination game, mm-hmm. against a very well-coached Virginia team in the ACC. So what was kind of the thought process to start, like, okay, we got to go play against Virginia in the first four game?
That was probably one of the most stressful days of my life. The selection Sunday, and when seeing we were in the first four, it was like, oh man, like kind of like at first, like everyone on the team was like, damn, bro, like that's not what we were expecting. You know what I mean? Like we weren't expecting, cause it's a lot more travel and it's like a lot more kind of like wear and tear on your body a little bit. But we just knew, like we knew we could beat Virginia. And like you said, Tony Bennett, legendary coach, like he's awesome. But like the more and more we got into it, like, man, we gotta take care of business, like we gotta like get it done. And we did, and it was just like such a surreal experience taking on Virginia, like an ACC powerhouse, like national championship Virginia, and like playing in that game and just being like, wow, like Tony Bennett's over there on the sideline, you know what I mean? Like I remember watching him like growing up. And so that was really cool, man, for me, like that experience in that first four. It was cool playing in Dayton, Ohio, at Dayton University's arena. Mm-hmm. Like, that place was unbelievable.
Beautiful sight.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So you guys smacked Virginia, 25-point win, mm-hmm. and you go to Charlotte, North Carolina, to play against Texas. And I want to hear a little bit more about that game. It wasn't the prettiest game for Colorado State. But I want to hear more about, like, what the experience of traveling, being with the guys was for all that time and that, like, playing in March Madness on national television.
Yeah, man, it's a dream come true. It was that's always been my dream, is to play March Madness. And so just getting to do that and playing a team, like, getting a win, too, against Virginia was awesome. And then, man, we just dropped a dud, to be honest with you. Like, that game, like, against Texas, like, we just, like – like not one, I don't think one of us played well on our team. And so like when that happens, man, like, and we were in the game too. In the second half, we were only down, I think at one point we cut the lead to like 6, and it was like, man, like we can do it. We're right here, even how bad we played, and then just kind of let it slip. But it was still cool, man. Just being in like Charlotte, traveling with the guys, like seeing all like the other stuff that was going on with March Madness, all the people there. Like, I think we were, we saw like Tennessee there at our venue, St. Peter's, Michigan State, Texas A&M. So it was just like cool, like being with like those teams and stuff like that, like, getting that experience and seeing those guys and like just being like kind of like thinking to yourself, like, yeah, like I'm here, you know? Mm-hmm. And then stepping on that floor, man, touching the March Madness logo, man, can't describe it.
That's tough. You talked like a little bit ago about how the first four game, you got to travel a lot more. You're playing mm-hmm. from – you played in a span of 2 games in 3 days. So do you think that mm-hmm. that kind of had an effect on your guys' game against Texas, or were you guys, like, ready to go no matter what?
I think so. So going back to it, we were in Las Vegas for the Mount West tournament, and then we flew home to Fort Collins for 28 hours. I think we were back home before we had to get on another plane, head to Dayton. We were in Dayton for a day and a half, maybe. Like, we were in Dayton. We beat Virginia. Right after we beat Virginia, 2 a.m., get on a plane, land in Charlotte, have practice the next day at 11. And it was just, man, it was a lot. So I think I did. I think we were ready to play, don't get me wrong, but it was still just like a lot of like, just like tiredness from like all like that traveling and like the constant games, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, unfortunate. That's why that first four game is tough.
Yeah.
What is it like stepping onto the court and like, obviously you said seeing the March Madness logo and like seeing the broadcasters, because they obviously mentioned you on the broadcast, the fact that you're a Division III mm-hmm. player and also your teammate that transferred from Division II to Division I. So what is that like mm-hmm. environment like, just with the bright lights, the fans, like all that stuff? Like, talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so it's really cool just to like, even like Charlotte, like people were like wearing headbands and stuff like that. And like just like random people that I had no idea about. People were going up to like my family was like wearing my jerseys. And I was a couple like other random people, like I had no idea who they were, like wearing my jersey. And like, if you would have told me 2-3 years ago when I was at Augsburg that in 2 years time that I would be there doing that, I would have called you the biggest liar in the world. Like, I would have been like, yeah, yeah, right. And then, yeah. And then like you said too, like even just like, you know, I got all my friends like sending me like on TV, them talking about me, saying stuff like, constantly like kind of panning to me and stuff on like the TV. I'm like, this is crazy, bro. Like, you were like, you just had like Division III in our small little town and now you're here. So that was really cool, bro. Like, it's just like that stuff I'll never forget. I'll take with me forever. And like, still have like obviously like videos and stuff from it, so it'll be cool.
That's dope, bro. So, you know, one of the last questions that we have one more after this, but you know, D3 to Division I is becoming more common by the year. A lot of division, you know, one interview, a Division III figure said that he could see Division III schools becoming feeder schools to Division I. And obviously, you know, not everyone has, you know, your career where they go 3 years and transfer D1. Like, not everyone is like that. So, you know, one thing I'm wondering is, what would you say to incoming freshmen just looking to make an impact at the Division III level?
Man, that's a... I would say if it's really important to you, if you're there for the right reasons, do whatever you can to just find a role for yourself and carve out a role. Because as you guys know, there's like a lot of guys that go some schools like allow like 20, 25 guys to be on the team. So I would say, what can you do that's going to separate yourself from the rest of the guys? Because everyone, you know, if no matter every college, you got to be a good player to play college basketball, no matter the level. So how are you going to affect the game in a different way from the other guys around you and still be good friends with them, or not friends with them, but just like friends with them, teammates with them, and not be a jerk, you know what I'm saying? So whether that's getting on the floor, being scrappy, getting some extra shots up, getting in the weight room way more than you think you need to, you know, stuff like that, I think is what separates the guys who really want it and the guys who just kind of want it, you know?
Yeah.
Another thing I'm kind of wondering about, maybe your answer could be different for this question, but what would be your advice to Division III transfers moving up that, you know, have the opportunity to do that? Like, would you say something different to them that have like those 2 years or 1 year left? Like, what would you say?
I would say have the right people in your corner telling you the truth. Don't get people who tell you the thing you want to hear. Get people to tell you the things that you need to hear, you know, because transferring from Division III to Division I is, it's a major jump. And more guys are doing it, and that's awesome. But you still got to make sure that you keep your priorities straight. You want to go there to play, right? I think every Division III guy that's transferred D1 would be like, absolutely, I'm trying to play. So if guys are saying that, really look into the system and where you can fit in and how you can contribute right away and make a splash, you know what I'm saying? So I would suggest that guys watch a lot of film and they do a lot of talking with their family and friends, their coaches, whoever, who's ever in their corner, and just really just like look at that stuff, because that stuff's so important, man, because you don't want to go D3 to D1 and like, you know, kind of sit the bench, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I would say for those guys, do it. Bet on yourself always. If you have the opportunity to do something like that, man, take a leap of faith, like, and just go out there and just like put everything you have and some into it. And it's crazy when you work hard like that, how good things can come to you. So,
yeah, I'm not gonna lie, you got the best advice I've heard when people answer those type of questions on advice yeah. for like Division III to D1 or just playing at the D3 level in general. But yeah, I think we're all kind of wondering what's next for Joe Palmer. Are you hanging up the shoes or are you gonna keep going?
Nah, man, I'm gonna keep going. So I'm about to choose which agency I'm gonna sign with here soon. So I've been on a lot of calls and whatnot, just trying to figure out where which agency I'm gonna sign with, and then from there, I don't know what country I'll be in, where I'll be at, but man, I can't see myself hanging them up quite yet. I'm gonna keep the dream alive, trying to just keep having fun with it, man. Just I'm not ready to put on the suit and tie yet and start working. So
I respect it, bro. Make a living out of it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you got big supporters over here, bro. It's been a good interview, honestly, and you've given us a lot of good stuff and given a lot of listeners good advice too. So we appreciate you and we supporting you, bro.
Yeah, no cap.
For sure. But appreciate that, guys.
We're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting five edition. Let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
I heard you.
Bet. So first question for rapid fire, top three restaurants in Fort Collins.
Bojo's Pizza, Chiba Hut, and oh man, I'm gonna say Pueblo Viejo.
Okay,
Mexican spot.
Favorite away gym.
Favorite away gym. San Diego State.
Yeah, you said that 20,000 people was packed in there when you went to go play them your first year.
Packed, bro. Crazy. Crazy.
And then last question. Hardest player to guard in the Mountain West.
It's a good one, bro.
Jaden Ledee.
He's a cop.
That dude is – he's a monster, bro. Literally a monster.
What grade is he in?
He was my age, so he's done.
Okay.
But, man, playing him this year, guard him was tough. So super strong.
Nah, that's tough. All right. So we're going to end with a little starting five edition. So if you were a coach assembling a starting five, who would your 1 through 5 be? And this edition, you know, you're a crowd pleaser. Everybody loves you. This is going to be your top five crowd pleasers.
Mm-hmm. So first one, Marshall Henderson. From way back into that Ole Miss. So he was crazy. He's a little too much for me, but I had to put him on there. Second one is gonna be Naz Reid, Minnesota Timberwolves fan. Naz Reid is literally the Minnesota man. Like, he's a legend here.
Really? That's tough.
Oh yeah. Bobby Portis.
Okay.
He gets the crowd going in Milwaukee. Jack Gokey, Oakland, March Madness legend. I gotta say me.
Yeah, you got to.
Got to, bro.
To round up to five. Got to.
Yo, that's
you playing the five, bro? You playing the five on that team?
Me or Bobby Portis.
No, that lineup of that is actually tough though. You guys would be a tough lineup to compete against.
Yes, sir.
But that's going to do it for another episode, Not Even D2. We really appreciate your time. Like Ruta said, you've given us great stuff, and the listeners could definitely take a lot from this interview. So we appreciate you joining.
For sure. I appreciate you guys a lot, man. Keep doing your thing.
Yes, sir.
Likewise.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2. If you haven't already, make sure to go follow all the socials at Not Even D2. You can catch every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen to your podcast. I'm your host, KJ Allison. And I'll see you next episode.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.